The hour of 10:15 having arrived, we will call the House Tax Committee to order. When we have a quorum, we will start out. I will move House File 1215 when we have a quorum. So members, if you please take out 1215. This is known as the Medillia Bill. Okay. So we will have the bill before us. We're going to go ahead and take testimony, Chair Cornish. I'm not sure if we got a boycott here or something or just what the deal is, but we're going to go with the flow here. Okay, so there's no amendments. So if you could give an introduction, Chair Cornish, and then we will have staff go into some of the technical issues, then we will go to... let's do it this way. Let's have Chair Cornish make a few comments, if you would, or as long as you want. Then we'll go to testimony. Then we'll have kind of a synopsis of the bill. So Chair Cornish, do your bill.
Okay, Mr. Chair and members, this House File 1215 basically is a bill, two-part bill. February 3rd of last year, probably most of you have heard of it, we had a devastating fire on the main street of Medillia. We've helped out in situations like this before, like tornadoes and floods, and what made this special was... Medillia was one of the few cities in our area that had Main Street literally full of active businesses. It wasn't one of those where windows were shuttered up. It had a very thriving community here where all of a sudden most of it was devastated in just one early morning fire that rounded about eight businesses. And so what this bill, House File 1215, does is a two-part thing. It gives an exemption for construction materials used in the restoration of Main Street, and then the other part would provide $1.4 million Medillia and $296,000 in Watonwan County. What I have here with me today is Ryan Vischer and Brent Christensen. Ryan is the owner of a business on Main Street, and Brent will introduce himself and his involvement in this community effort. And if I could have Ryan say a few words.
Certainly. First of all, a couple things here, members. First of all, though, is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify on behalf of this bill? Is there anyone that has concerns? The department, I believe, wishes to make some comments on this bill. Okay, now, members, this is a little backwards, if you will, in that we're hearing this bill today to give it a hearing. I've asked Chair Drazkowski at some future point to go to property taxes with this bill to review it so they can, fine-tune it if there's anything that needs to be changed. So we're doing a little backwards. Normally it goes to property taxes first, then comes here. But I've asked Chair Drazkowski to hear this bill at his convenience at a future date. So. With that being said, Mr. Vischer, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Sure. My name is Ryan Vischer. I represent Dream River Marketing Group, which is one of the businesses on Main Street that was lost to the fire.
Okay. To your testimony.
Yes. Thank you, Chairman, and for the legislators for hearing this bill again. It was heard last year, and we're grateful that it is being heard again this year. We are here to ask for help. We need the help of you guys so that we can effectively, continue our businesses as they were. As Representative Cornish said, is that it was a full Main Street. We're a very vibrant town, but we're a small town. And, from folks that are from small towns, it is hard to keep businesses not only in town, but it's also harder after something such as the loss of a fire or something devastating to a building to have anybody rebuild, not just take the insurance money and run. And we chose, a third of our downtown burned down, and we chose as a group of property owners to rebuild. And we're proud to say that a year later after the fire, we do have buildings on Main Street that are under construction or some are partially open. But having a new building in our town doesn't necessarily change the business climate of our town. And so what we're asking for is relief from property taxes, as they will inherently go up because it's a new building. And so that's why we are here.
Mr. Vischer, thank you. And you still have the floor, sir, but we do have a quorum. I'll officially call the meeting of the House Tax Committee to order. Representative Schultz Moves the minutes of February 16th. Any additions or corrections? Hearing none, all payers say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Schultz. Okay, back to Mr. Vischer. I will move House File 1215. Mr. Vischer.
And if it's okay, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to pass the baton over to Tom Osborne. That is who is testifying today. He is the chair of the Medelia Strong Committee. It's been a catchword in our town. It's been, you know, the overwhelming support of our community as well as the area. And he has chaired and headed that up. And as a business owner, we are extremely grateful for him doing it. But he can probably give some more insight onto the need.
Mr. Chair, first I have to apologize for misintroducing him. I have the wrong name. Sorry about that, sir.
I look like him.
Now, Cornhouse Fisher.
Yeah, exactly.
But do you live in Medelia?
Yes.
So you're...
I live outside of Medelia, but I grew up there.
Home of the Blackhawks?
Yes.
Okay, good. Okay, to your testimony, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Tom Osborne. I'm here today as a member of the Medelia community. I own a business across the street from the side of the fire, and am president of Medelia Strong, Inc., a nonprofit organization that was organized shortly after the fire to administer aid to the victims of the fire and to help with the recovery and building effort in Medelia. Medelia is a community with a population of approximately 2,300 people. We have a hospital, good schools, a couple of restaurants, a couple of gas stations, a grocery store, a hardware store, an automobile dealership, a movie theater, and many other small businesses. Medelia is pretty unique. Nearly every building on Main Street is occupied. On February 3rd, 2016, a devastating fire destroyed part of the heart of Medelia's Main Street. Seven buildings were lost, nine businesses were displaced, and more than 35 people were suddenly out of work. A disaster of this magnitude would likely be the beginning of the end for many a small town. How easy would it be for a business owner to take the insurance money and move on? The insurance proceeds were many times more than what the properties could have been sold for. Not rebuilding would leave a gaping hole on Main Street that would likely never be filled. Losing 30-some jobs would result in less people patronizing those local businesses. It would only be a matter of time before the dominoes began to fall. People move away. Businesses close, property values fall, and schools consolidate somewhere else. The unthinkable eventually happens, the vines of the community deteriorate and die. Contrary to what made the best business sense, the property owners as a group decided to rebuild despite significant funding shortfalls. The decision to rebuild was based on community pride rather than common sense. The community came together to support fire victims. The businesses affected by the fire were determined to continue operating while they rebuilt. Medelia Strong was able to provide disaster relief to displaced workers until their employers established temporary locations. We were able to save every job and keep every affected employee in Medelia. All the displaced businesses were operating out of temporary or new permanent locations in a matter of weeks. Two businesses moved into their new buildings in December, less than 11 months after the fire. Today, a little more than a year since the fire, Medelia's Main Street looks amazing with new buildings and all. An incredible ending to a nightmare, right? Not yet. We've come a long way, but we need a little help to get to the finish line, which is why we're here today. The costs to rebuild are more than the original estimates and are significantly more than the insurance recovery and donations raised by Medelia Strong and others. Although the building owners have secured debt to finance the projects, future debt service obligations are not sustainable. This aid is essential to the future viability of these businesses and the community. We are extremely grateful beyond words for the aid being considered and the proposed legislation for Medelia. Please support this legislation. This aid will help the community get back to where it was before this disaster. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to testify today. I would be happy to answer any questions you all may have.
Thank you. Chair Cornish.
Mr. Chairman, members, if I could have Ryan introduce a couple of members just for a wave over here, would let you know who is here.
Absolutely.
Mr. Fisher?
Yes, we have Carla Angus in the audience. She is the Medelia Area Chamber of Commerce Director. And next to her, we have Jane Keepgrass. She is the City Administrator of the City of Medelia. So.
And welcome to the Tax Committee, to both of you. Okay, item next, I think what we'll do, I think what I'd like to do is before we go to questions, maybe Ms. Dalton, could you give us a rundown on the mechanics of what we're doing here? And then I will go to the department. We'll go to some questions, and then we'll go to the department.
Mr. Chair, members
Ms. Dalton.
Members of the committee, Section 1 actually provides a sales tax exemption. It's a retroactive sales tax exemption because, as the testifiers have indicated, much of the building has already occurred. So the tax was imposed and was collected, and so this allows for a refund. Sections 2 through 4 are actually the refund mechanisms, and then Section 5 is the appropriation for fiscal year 2017, which means before June 30th of this year, from the general fund to make grants to the City of Medelia and to Wampanoag County, $1.4 million to Medelia, $296,000 to Wampanoag County, and my understanding is that those are for property tax abatements.
Okay. And again, members, this has not had a thorough hearing in property tax division yet, but it will in the near future, I'm sure. That being said, and also just to clear up now, how is this language different from House File 848? Or is it the same language?
Mr. Chair, I believe it's the same language.
Okay. So we'll go to Representative McDonald, Petersburg, Anderson. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just texted my friend Chuck Henka, who grew up in Medelia. His dad had a hardware store called Hardware. You gentlemen are nodding. Yeah. And anyway, he indicated that the hardware store is on the second photograph here. Anyway, just real briefly, I remember seeing this last 2 years ago and certainly support the bill. I have a studio on downtown Delano Main Street, very similar to Medelia. All the buildings are historic, and most of them are filled. Most of them throughout the years have been owned, and go back 100 years. My building in particular is 100 years. And so each building owner, each business takes great pride in those great buildings and restoring them and having a robust downtown, especially for a small town. I know how important it is. So not that you need to hear this, Representative Cornish, but I completely support the bill. I think it's good governance that we help out our fellow neighbors in this situation and allow them to keep more of their money so they can reinvest in the downtown. And just in closing, wondered if would love to see some photographs of the rebuild. And maybe also, can you speak to the nature of some of the buildings? Have they tried to restore and build to that historic buildings from that were burnt down?
Yes,
Mr. Osborne.
The new buildings look fantastic. You drive through Main Street, it's incredible. They did an incredible job designing the buildings. The storefronts are pretty much equal level with the rest of the stores that are on either side of them. It's really, 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 really well done.
And if I can add to that, we did,
Mr. Fisher,
when we were designing the buildings, we made sure that they each all have their slightly different peaks, as you find in a historical, you know, because no building was equally across like you find in a modern strip mall. You know, they all have their different peaks and parapets, and it is all brick front. It's a steel building, but brick front to keep in the character of the community.
Vice Chairman McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, gentlemen. So just looking at the fiscal note, the Department of Revenue, it's just for 2018, it would be $180,000. Is that a rebate then? Does that include the rebate and then are any future tax exemptions?
Ms. Dalton.
Refunds?
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, $180,000 is the assumed entire rebate or refund of the sales tax.
Thank you, McDonald. Thank you. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think this question may be more for Ms. Dalton or Mr. Michael, but I know a few years ago we put in place an assistance fund for natural resources, natural disasters, in which we just put money into it so that the legislature doesn't have to deal with day-to-day and coming back all the time to deal with some of them. This is slightly different, but Is there a way in which we could actually modify the current legislation or put up something similar so that we don't have to come and have it be brought forward to the legislature every time a disaster occurs?
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Petersburg, there is a structure and a fund to take care of natural disasters, right. So it deals with things like floods and tornadoes and so forth. You could certainly expand the scope of that to apply to events like this. You would have to, you know, come up with a definition that would define it and what it could be used for. And you would also have to fund it. That fund has typically not been funded very much so that it would be adequate to cover that. But certainly you could try to anticipate these kinds of things and, you know, fund them in advance.
Thank you. I kind of thought maybe that was the case, and funding is always the difficult part, but sometimes when we have surpluses, maybe that's a good place to put it, because whether it's as a tax deduction or a rebate or a refund, it still is money coming out of the general budget. So it might be something for us to consider. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Chair Anderson S.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of questions. I think that I saw last year there was some line items for Medelia in either the, I think I saw it in the tax bill, I think I saw it in the bonding bill, and then I don't know if it was in any of the spending bills. So, Representative, did we provide any funding for Medelia last year at all in one of the spending bills that were signed into law? And if you don't remember right now, I can look it up later, too.
Mr. Chair, members, I believe the bill that was in the bonding bill was for near $100,000. That's active again this year for $101,000, and but it went through a direct appropriation. We're doing that in a direct appropriation. That was for infrastructure damage that the city actually had to take care of on the streets, and this one would be for the businesses. And this was also in the tax bill last year. This the bill we're currently on.
Chair Anderson S.
Mr. Chair, and this is probably for the city officials. Is it possible that individuals will get more than what the actual cost is if you factor in the insurance benefits that they receive at all?
I can answer.
On top of this, or have you looked at that?
Yes,
Mr. Osborne.
Yes, thank you. We've looked at that thoroughly, and not right now. That's not a possibility.
Okay.
Right. Chair Anderson, yes. Chair Carlson.
Well, we kind of went down the road that I was going to ask about, and that was the natural disaster fund. But there has been at some point some conversation about, instead of having a direct appropriation, giving the governor or some entity authority to draw out of the reserve funds, you know, what was needed, because it is hard to predict, you know, what you might need. Of course, this would expand the role. We were talking at that point in time. In fact, I think we put like $15 million in it, if I recall correctly. Maybe I'm wrong on that exact number, but there was a lot of discussion about whether that would be a high enough figure to meet the needs. But we've had emergency situations not far from Medelia. A few years ago, we had the tornado that hit St. Peter. We were in legislative session at the time, and so we were able to respond very quickly. I don't remember exactly what we did, but I worked with Representative Drakowski when I chaired the Finance Committee on a fire. I think it was a meat plant, turkey plant, whatever, in St. Charles, Minnesota. I don't remember exactly what we did. I think that was an appropriation in that case. But there have been kind of a checkered past, because if you're not in session, that was why Pawlowski was interested in getting that fund going. And I don't have any idea now as to how frequently that's been drawn upon, but there was a lot of discussion about how much was needed in the fund.
And Chair Carlson, that's a very good point, because the question is, are we in session or not? I remember Comfrey in North Minneapolis had the tornado.
Yeah, that would be another example. Yeah.
So, and I think that's a very good discussion to have, or another bill we put forward to work on that idea. I think that's a very good idea. So, other questions from members? Representative Carlson?
Well, I just was following up on the comment that was made about the disaster fund, because that was on my mind as I was listening to the testimony.
And I believe we'll go to the department at this point. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
I'll meet up with you. Yeah.
Welcome to the committee, sir. Now, I have a quick question. Well, please introduce yourself to the record, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue.
Mr. Cummings, quick question about tomorrow's bill.
Yes.
Is this issue covered in my bill tomorrow?
Mr. Chair, you do have a bill, and one part of that bill, Mr. Chair, that you have authored is relief to Medelia. Yes.
Okay. So, very good. Okay, so with that, if you could please provide your testimony.
I was able to reach out to Representative Cornish's office before the hearing. In December, Mr. Chair, I did visit Medelia and had the Italian stromboli at Fox's Pizza Den, and it was perfection. And I can report that the Main Street is looking great. So wherever the representatives are. Governor Dayton and Lieutenant Governor Smith support the sales tax exemption for Medelia and have proposed aid to both Medelia and Watonwan County in their budget. We want to thank Representative Cornish for his leadership on this issue. Mr. Chair, in the Governor's budget and in your bill, Mr. Chair, Governor Dayton and Lieutenant Governor Smith have recommended $31,000 for the city of Medelia and $15,000 for Watonwan County per year for the next 20 years to help make up for the loss in property tax base due to the Medelia fire. These amounts are equal to the projected property taxes abated by the city and county. In addition, the governor's proposal provides a sales tax exemption for construction materials, equipment, and supplies used to construct or replace property affected by the fire in Medelia. As this bill moves through the process, Mr. Chair, the Department of Revenue looks forward to working with you, Representative Cornish, members of staff, and we thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Mr. Cummings. Any questions from members for Mr. Cummings? Thank you. With that, I will move House File 1215 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Chair Cornish.
Thank you
to the folks from Medelia. I've got one thing to say. I say go Blackhawks. That's what I say. Okay. With that, let's go to item next, House File 1275, a Smith bill. We're very fortunate today to have Representative Smith with us. And so Representative Hurtas moves House File 1275. I see no amendments at this point. So before we get started, Representative Smith, is there anyone in the audience who wish to testify on behalf of the bill with concerns thereof? Department?
Not at this time.
You'll be a resource?
Maybe.
Okay. With that, Representative Hurtas moves House File 1275, two-year bill. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Good morning. Currently, all food sold in vending machines is taxable. This bill provides an exemption for non-taxable food when sold in vending machines for specific types. And we'll have some expert testimony as to the different types, Mr. Chair. And if we could move to that first testifier, that would be great.
Wonderful. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Ward Ines with the Minnesota Automated Merchandising Council.
Welcome to committee, sir.
Thank you. I want to first and foremost thank Representative Smith for coming forward with this proposal to address what has really been a longstanding and really antiquated inequity in our current tax code. As Representative Smith said, currently all merchandise purchased via a vending machine is taxable. Those same products, many of them bottled water, sunflower seeds, etc., would be tax exempt if purchased in a vending or purchased in a convenience store or in a grocery store. I think we'd all agree around this table that maybe one of the core principles of good tax policy is that similar transactions should be taxed in a similar manner. I think the discriminatory policy we have in place now with vending machine merchandise is a clear violation of that kind of core good tax policy principle. I also want to thank Mr. Cummings and the Department of Revenue team for meeting with us back in January to fully vet this proposal with them. They did raise a legitimate issue that I think we adequately addressed. They are concerned about there being an adequate audit trail for their auditors to go in and, you know, conduct an audit with these vending machine transactions. We impressed upon them that the vending machines of today, the modern vending machine, is a very sophisticated machine. It has the capability to track with great precision the individual transactions that occur at any given machine, and by extension, that technology can be used to provide a very robust, complete, and adequate audit trail for the Department of Revenue. So we appreciate their time. I think we adequately addressed their primary issue with this change in policy. It's also worth noting, Chairman, that this policy has been completely litigated. In 2003, the Minnesota Appellate Court basically told us that the appropriate venue for addressing this disparate tax treatment for vending machines is the legislature. The legislature is the appropriate venue. That's why we find ourselves in front of your committee, Chairman. But I think this is long overdue. I think this is an antiquated policy. If you rewind the tape 50 years, there wasn't technology in these machines. They weren't the modern machines they are today. It would have been very difficult to track the individual transactions that occur in the machine. And also, I think the product mix in these machines has changed dramatically over time. You know, 40, 50 years ago, everything was candy, everything was soda, it was gum, it was, you know, Lifesavers, everything that would be taxable in the context of a grocery store or a convenience store. Today, you'll see a much more mixture of products in there, bottled water, sunflower seeds, nuts, things that if you go to a grocery store or a convenience store would not be taxable. So this is really an equity thing. This committee has done a really good job over the years of trying to address these inequities and basically upholding the principle that doesn't matter what the venue is for how the transaction occurs, whether it's a bricks and mortar store, the internet, a vending machine, the tax consequences should be the same regardless of how the transaction occurs. And with your permission, Chairman, I'd like to bring up a couple of vending machine operators to provide their perspective on the bill.
Certainly, and as they come up, I just want to know that I've had legal counsel look into this for myself. I thought I might have to recuse myself from voting on this since I'm such a big user of this industry. But since it's statewide and it's all vending machines, members, feel free to vote on this. Before we bring the folks down, if you would, please, Ms. Dalton, does this mess us up at all with streamlined sales tax?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, no.
You wouldn't?
No.
Okay, thank you. Anybody comment? Gentlemen, please state your name, who you represent for the record, and please provide your testimony.
My name is Steve Marks. I represent the Minnesota Automatic Merchandiser Council.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, again, my name is Steve Marks. I'm also the owner of a company called Royal Vending out of Maple Grove, Minnesota. We're a 10-route vending machine company currently operating throughout the Twin City metro area. I currently serve on the board of directors of the National Automatic Merchandiser Association, NAMA, and am currently the president of the Minnesota Automatic Merchandiser Association. I'm here to testify in support of Bill HF-1275. MAMC is an affiliated state council of NAMA, representing many small businesses that provide vending and office coffee services to thousands of Minnesotans each day and employing hundreds of workers in the state of Minnesota. As vending operators and small business owners in the state of Minnesota, we are seeking parity with other Minnesota retailers that do not pay sales tax on the same products we sell through vending machines. Pursuant to Minnesota statute, all food product that is sold through vending machines are subject to sales tax. In other retail locations, such as grocery stores and convenience stores, only prepared food, soft drinks, and candy are subject to sales tax. Due to the disparity in the law, vending machine operators are forced to either absorb the sales tax or pass it on to the consumers. Absorbing the sales tax hurts the bottom line for an industry that is comprised of many small businesses and operates on slim profit margins. Passing the tax on to the consumer means increasing the tax burden on working people, students, and military personnel in the state who make up a large percentage of the vending industry's customers. Our businesses are put at a great disadvantage to our competition, such as cafeterias, convenience stores, grocery stores, etc. If a consumer goes into a convenience store or other retail location and purchases any of the following items I brought...
Oh, we've got them already.
I guess you guys have already taken them. They are not paying sales tax on those items. The vending machine operator who cannot realistically compete and sell the items for more than their competition needs to remit sales tax, which comes directly out of the profits because of the lack of ability to pass it on to the customers. Furthermore, many items that have this unfair sales tax are healthier options, which makes it very difficult for the vending company to offer these items at competitive prices or even at all. The imposition of this tax is also difficult due to the fact that the vending prices can only be raised in nickel increments. Should this measure become law, our industry would have the means to reinvest in our business in the form of capital and technology improvements and increased sales. This reinvestment in business and economic activity will undoubtedly have a positive impact on the state by increasing tax revenues through those investments. We urge the committee to vote aye on HF1275. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Marks, if you could please stick around here because we'll go to the next gentleman, then we'll go to questions from members. And just so you know, this is heart healthy. It says so, right?
I was thinking of you, Mr. Chairman.
So, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chairman and representatives, my name is Mark Young with a company called Apple Automatic Food Service that I started in 1989 from scratch, and now we have 35 employees and are located in Plymouth, Minnesota.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you. We're here because this started, you brought up the streamlined sales tax. This started in 2001. In 2001, if you guys all have this bill here and you turn to page 2 and you go to 2.13, in 2.13 it says all food sold through vending machines. Okay, we were, and in 2001 when the Uniform Sales Tax Administration came through and the Uniform Act was enacted, they added those six words that all food sold through vending machines is taxable. So they taxed us like a restaurant instead of like a convenience store or a grocery store. So one of the examples you didn't see here is a bottle of milk or cheeses or all the type of healthy things and things like that that are taxed in vending, but not in any other, not in a grocery store or a convenience store. Much has changed in the last decade plus. Vending machines have state-of-the-art wireless technology that tells us what is selling, when, and what to bring to our machines. We now have hundreds of different types of beverages, as we talked about, water, snacks, and foods, and we track each one of these individual each time. There has been a great expansion also in our competitors in the convenience store and grocery area with large, more robust stores, now expanded products and selections. Again, like we talked about, many of these items are non-taxable in a convenience store, but they are taxed in our vending machines. In the last decade, too, one of the transitions has been there has been a transit tax, and there's been the five-county metro tax that was on. This is a pass-through for most retails. It's basically a percentage of 1 cent or something like that is added to the end purchase. On vending, we have to take that back out. So if we sell a bottle of water, if a convenience store sells a bottle of water for $1.50 or a bottle of milk, that's what they sell for. There's no tax. If we're selling for $1.50 here in St. Paul, we're actually selling for $1.38.5. We've got to take 11.5 cent out of that transaction, out of our in thing, and pay revenue on that. And part of that increase is a half percent in St. Paul, and, you know, these little taxes add up. In fact, in my little business, or not my little business, my business, the baseball tax, the transit tax, or the baseball tax, costs about $4,000 to $5,000 a year, additional taxes, sales tax that we have to pay on top of it, that we cannot recoup through our machines, or if we do, it's a nickel at a time, and somehow we have to, you know, get that increase. So I should get a pair of tickets for that, really. Bad joke, sorry.
I'm sure there's some law against that.
The other points I want to make, our vending industry is a blue collar industry. We're very labor intensive and we're a very capital investment business. Businesses like ours keep the economic wheels turning. We invest in our people, technology, industry equipment, fleet of vehicles, each and every year. It's just not a one-time thing, it's a continual thing. We're always investing in equipment and our people. Small companies like ours have a very positive influence on the economy. Our four major suppliers have major operations in Minnesota. Vistar Supply, Master Wholesale, Pepsi of Burnsville, and Coca Vegan. So we're helping those companies prosper. We purchase vehicles and equipment from local dealers. The state generates revenue from our payroll taxes, fleet of vehicles and gas taxes, license fees from our vending machines, the list goes on. The 35 people that my company employ are all making living wages with entry-level jobs, making $15 an hour plus benefits and a matching 401k and annual profit sharing opportunities after a year of service. Small businesses like ours help make this state great. And that's my comments. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Before we go to questions from members, was there anybody else in the audience which testified on behalf of this bill? Okay, questions from members? Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to clarify what the testifier just said. So you do not pass on that tax. You are not able to charge a higher price than your competitors, or is that what you stated?
Mr. Young or Mr. Mark? Mr. Young?
No.
Mr. Mark?
Yes. Can you restate the question?
So are you allowed, thank you, Mr. Chair, are you allowed in your business to pass on the tax in the form of a higher price for your products?
Mr. Marks?
Sure. Well, what we have seen over the years is as these products have gotten to be more expensive, obviously we have a sales tax that we have to pay on those items. So if you take the same example as Mr. Young did about a bottle of water at $1.50, at some point the consumer just is not willing to pay any more than a certain price. And we become very disenfranchised to the convenience store when they're selling that product for at that price or less, and they don't have the tax, and we have to pay the tax because it's a hidden tax to the consumer. They don't know that we're paying that tax.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you. So you are able to pass on the tax in the form of a higher price, but because of price elasticity, you're concerned about the volume of sales because the price would be too high.
Mr. Mark.
Yes, that is correct.
Representative Schultz. Chair Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I was just going to respond to something that Mr. Ines said. He said it was a relatively new phenomena that food was in vending machines. And when I was in high school, my parents moved not long before I graduated to a fast-growth school district. We were on half days, and so we didn't have lunch. We had a mid-morning break. We started at 7, we were out at noon, and then the junior high came in. But they had machines in the lunchroom. They sold oranges, apples, milk, grapes, no pop. I was just responding to what Mr. Ryan has said, because I would have been back in the 1950s, a little earlier. So for future reference, I thought he might want to correct his testimony. A good-natured comment.
Any other questions for members? With that, Representative Hertas will renew his motion that House File 1275 be later for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank Representative Hertas, thank Representative Smith, and to your witnesses. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Item next is we'll go to Chair Anderson S., House File 89. Members, and we'll let Chair Anderson get to the desk or the table. And I see there's an A4 amendment, Chair Anderson. Is that yours? Okay. So Chair Anderson S. moves House File 89. Chair Anderson S. moves the A4, the H0089A4 amendment. Any questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted to get the bill in the shape the author would like. And just looking at my list here, I have Ms. Pomodoro, Broad, Mr. French, Mr. Rusick. Is there anyone else that would like to testify on behalf of this bill? Got a few more folks, or on behalf of the bill? Or with concerns thereof. Okay, a concern back there? Okay. Department? A resource?
Department of Revenue does not have any comments at this time.
Okay.
Okay, so we will go with, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, and yeah. Who are you?
Thank you.
To your bill is amendment. Amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, you're all pretty familiar with the Angel Investor Tax Credit. What this does is it makes the Angel Investor Tax Credit permanent. It puts $20 million into the fund and provides a great resource to the innovators of the state of Minnesota. And I'm going to keep my comments brief because I know we have a full schedule today, but I do have some testifiers that want to speak to the issue of how important this is to continuing to make Minnesota a state of innovation and creation and life-saving measures. So, Mr. Chair.
Please, thank you, Chair Anderson. That's two. House File 89 as amended. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Genevieve Plumidor with the Medical Alley Association. We have been before your committee before, so you are familiar with our economic impact document that shows how many jobs, 167,000 Minnesotans directly and indirectly involved in health technology companies. At an average wage of 120,000, 931 companies here in the state, making us the most highly concentrated health technology market per capita in the entire world. The Angel Investment Tax Credit is a program that has shown to leverage investments for our small startups here in the state. If you look at my other handout, $23 million has been invested just in 138 health tech companies alone that has leveraged an additional $340 in investments. That means jobs, that means companies growing here in Minnesota. We have a couple of opportunities here to continue to grow this type of economy here in the state. Digital health is a burgeoning area where we are seeing a ton of development here in the state. We could be considered the Silicon Valley of that new tech industry, and programs like the Angel Investment Tax Credit can help to make that happen. Additionally, there's another opportunity around biotechnology. We're seeing huge growths in that area, and I will bring up a familiar face, a testifier, to come and talk about that opportunity and those types of companies here in the state. Thank you.
Who is that? Please state your name and who represents for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Laura Broad, and I'm the CEO of RoverMed Biosciences, and I'm glad to look at you from this angle because I'm pretty sure I've looked at you in reverse, Mr. Chairman.
I don't know which view is better. Let's just leave that one go. Please provide your testimony to House File 89 as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I knew you would take that in an interesting way. RoverMed Biosciences is a biotechnology company located here in Minnesota that is developing the next delivery technology to enable the next generation of new drugs. Billions of dollars are being spent by pharmaceutical companies to do precision-targeted therapeutics for cancer and other challenging diseases, but none of those technologies will actually impact the human condition unless they have a delivery technology like ours that delivers their therapeutic right to and into the cells that they need to treat. There's a lot of technologies out there that treat around diseases, but those actually impact healthy cells as opposed to just taking on the cancer cells or other disease cells. So this is exciting technology that has the opportunity to really transform therapeutics and healthcare delivery for patients with very challenging diseases. The Angel Tax Credit is significant and critical to our company. Our company has a very novel technology, and that novelty is something that I can't show people because it's so darn small. The chairman worked on a nanotechnology company years ago, but there's billions of dollars of cancer treatments in this tube. Billions of treatments, because the nanoparticles are so small, but each one of them has an ability to treat a disease. So it's really hard to sell something that people can't see with a model that they don't understand. And the Angel Tax Credit is critical to helping our investors decide to take the risk, to take the leap, to invest in a company that has high potential but maybe hasn't proven it yet. So I just wanted to thank you for taking a look at an important, what I think is a critical expenditure by the state. Our lowest paying job in our company is a $60,000 job. These are good paying jobs, And this is the other key component, I think, for the purposes of the language of the bill. The refundable part of this tax credit is also critical because it brings money from outside the state and invests it here. So we're keeping money here, we're building jobs here, and we're bringing money to advance critical technology here in Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
With that, Lead Marquardt, I apologize to you. Did you want to have a question for Ms. Pomodoro or Ms. Broad or the author?
For the author. Mr. Chair, thank you. I just thought if the author could clarify what the 84 amendment did. We didn't hear that. Just so I understand it. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Marquardt. Based on the feedback from the Jobs Committee that we had from different members, it makes the Angel Investor Tax Credit into what it was originally when it was first authored, I believe, by Representative Dabney. So it makes it the same credit that's available across the state of Minnesota to anybody that wishes to utilize that. And I want to call her Representative Broad, but Ms. Broad had highlighted RoverMed, and that's based out of St. Cloud, correct? So it would be companies that are stationed across the state of Minnesota.
Lead Marquardt?
Yeah. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. So I'm correct. The two main things is from your bill, you took out the requirement that it would only go to cities that did not receive the LGA, correct. And then you removed the requirement that 50% of the credit had to go out to greater Minnesota. Is that correct?
Chair Anderson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Marquardt, it makes the Angel Investor Credit back to what it was originally.
Okay, so I'll have some questions later, but just so I understand, then, it is eliminating that portion that would require 50% to go out to greater Minnesota.
Chair Anderson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Marquardt, based on the feedback that I received from the members in the Jobs Committee, there was concerns about carve-outs just in general, and so, yes, this is bringing the Angel Investor Tax Credit back to what it was originally when it was first created here for the state of Minnesota.
Thank you. Steve Marquardt, and we'll come back for our questions. Representative Schultz, and then Lothar. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So why remove that carve-out for greater Minnesota?
Chair Anderson S.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Schultz. As I mentioned earlier, we had feedback during the Jobs Committee hearing. Folks had concerns about carve-outs. And so rather than fighting the battle about carve-outs, I said removed all of them. And then this brings the Angel Investor Tax Credit back to what it was originally. So when this was first passed into law, like I said, I believe it was Representative Dabney that carried the legislation. This is how it was when it was originally put into place for Minnesota as a tool to attract these high-paying jobs.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But one of our job here is to help greater Minnesota in terms of job opportunities and provide incentives for businesses to locate in greater Minnesota. How much of this fund was used in greater Minnesota, and will this be more difficult for businesses to have, now they have no incentive to locate in greater Minnesota. So are we hurting greater Minnesota by removing this carve-out?
Chair Anderson asked.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Schultz. Not at all. In fact, when you look, and Ms. Manzi will correct me if I am wrong, but I believe in the first year that the carve-out was in place, greater Minnesota, I think, accessed about $2.4 million. In the second year, they accessed about $4.5 million of the credit. But when you look at the fact that I'm increasing the overall fund to $20 million, which would be the highest that it has ever been, it will make sure that it accommodates anybody that is interested in utilizing this as a tool to growing jobs in their community. And so I would argue that it doesn't hinder greater Minnesota from getting these jobs in their area. It's just another tool for every community, regardless of where they're located.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you. And is there information on how many applied or the funds requested initially that were located in metro areas versus rural areas? Do we have that information?
Chair Anderson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Schultz. The carve-out for greater Minnesota was $7.5 million, so they did not use the full amount.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But what was the request for funds from urban areas in Minnesota, the metro area, in the past?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to have to ask Ms. Manzi to see if she has greater details.
Ms. Manzi, to the Schultz question.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Schultz, we can maybe get you something more comprehensive over the life of the credit. The Department of Employment and Economic Development maintains statistics related to where credits have been used since it was initiated. The carve-out that's under discussion has only been in effect for since tax year 2015. So it was in effect for 2015 and 2016 and is in effect for the allocation that's available this year for 2017. In 2016, the preliminary, or the actually the summary data from the Department of Employment and Economic Development compiled by Mr. Nelson, so, who I see is at the witness table and can probably answer this better than I, showed that there were 29 women-owned, minority-owned, or greater Minnesota businesses that received investments, and there were a total of, I believe, 105 businesses that received investments. So maybe Mr. Nelson would like to add something to answer Representative Schultz's question.
Please state for the record, please, to the Schultz question.
Mr. Chair, my name is Jeff Nelson. I manage the Angel Tax Credit Program for the Department of Employment and Economic Development.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you. Ms. Manzi is correct. In 2016, approximately $3.7 million in credits was used by the targeted businesses, which includes Greater Minnesota and women-owned businesses and minority-owned businesses. They had $7.5 million of credits reserved for them. And again, they used 3.7 of them. Those credits that are reserved until September 30th, when they then became available to all businesses. And there was, again, that difference between the 7.5 and the 3.7 that were then used by all businesses before the end of the year.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you.
Okay. I think, members, what we'll do is I have Loeffler and Dabney on the list. I'd like to get all the testimony on the books, and so folks stick around, because if any of the members have questions for you, I want to bring you back up. So let's go to a Mr. Bob French. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, and then present your testimony.
My name is Bob French. I'm the Chief Operating Officer of 75F.
Okay, just a second here. That's kind of hard to hear here. Okay, please provide your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. In 2014, I was a mentor for 75F at the Minnesota Cup. At that time, I joined the company as the first U.S. employee. We save energy by making dumb buildings smart. We provide a very important role in our economy. We do this through cloud computing and internet-connected devices. Last year, in 2016, we were the number six largest Xcel Energy trade partner for efficiency controls. So we are really making a difference in energy savings. So since 2014, we've grown to 17 full-time employees in Burnsville, and the Angel Tax Credit has helped us raise $3 million. It is an absolutely critical component to our startup. As the testimony provided earlier, with startup companies like ours that are doing things in a new way, it's important to de-risk the investment for angel investors. In this case, the de-risking is a way for them to get a better return on their investment guaranteed because of the investment. And it's also a mark of confidence from the state, because only certain companies qualify. So it helps with our credibility when we're making pitches to the angels for these reasons. So I urge to continue this program and to pass this. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'll take questions when you do like.
Thank you, Mr. David Rusick.
Thank you.
And if everybody could stick around on this bill, because if members have questions, we want to get the questions answered. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Hi, John Dukich with the Minnesota High Tech Association. We're a trade association that represents 300 science and technology companies throughout the state of Minnesota, with the goal of helping make Minnesota a top five science and technology state. And the last time I was before the committee, I had mentioned that we recently moved from 12th to 7th nationally. And we get high marks for our workforce, our science and technology workforce, but don't do so well when it comes to entrepreneurship. There we're ranked 16th. And that shows that we have room for improvement. And so the Angel Investment Tax Credit is important for stimulating investment in Minnesota science and technology startups. Since the start of the Angel Investment Tax Credit program in 2010, more than $377 million in private investment in Minnesota companies has been tied to the credit. In 2016 alone, 105 Minnesota startups benefited from the Angel Tax Credit. That's 105 businesses from biotech to medical device to software that have the potential to grow and create high-paying jobs in Minnesota. But the Angel Investment Tax Credit isn't just about jobs, at least not initially. It's about creating an environment that helps small companies grow into larger ones. Given the investment climate in Minnesota, without the credit, we risk losing companies to other states like California, Massachusetts, and Texas, which have friendlier environments for entrepreneurs. And I have with us today an investor who can share his experience with the credit, David Rusick.
Please take your name to represent for the record, please, sir.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members, my name is Dave Rusick. I'm founder and managing director of Gopher Angels, an angel investor network.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you. All right. Again, my name is Dave Rusick. I am founder and managing director of Gopher Angels, an angel investor network based here in Minnesota. Gopher Angels was founded 5 years ago, but before Gopher Angels, I started and owned two businesses here in Minnesota. We know firsthand the difficulty in raising funds to start a new business. We ended up with investors from outside of Minnesota, and I believe the support of an angel tax credit at this time would have helped us raise dollars here in Minnesota. As a result of the fact that the dollars were raised outside of Minnesota, the headquarters actually moved to Atlanta. So we lost our headquarters, which originally started here. This was part of our motivation for founding Gopher Angels, to make it easier for startups to raise dollars in Minnesota so that companies could stay headquartered here and grow here. Gopher Angels, just to give you a little bit more of a definition of what we do, Gopher Angels is not a fund. Rather, individual investor members in Gopher Angels make their own investment decisions in collaboration with other members. It is a member-driven organization. We see quality deals and welcome startups from throughout the state. We currently have 70 members in our group, and over the 5 years since our inception, we have invested over $12 million in 30 startups. We have a diverse group of investors, including corporate execs, entrepreneurs, and small venture firms. They represent a variety of businesses from healthcare to digital technology to food and ag to clean tech. Our group seeks quality investments, again, that will provide a reasonable return in a reasonable amount of time. But in addition to investing, and this is important, our members invest their time, expertise, and networks to help startups succeed. We have reached out to Greater Minnesota and worked with Red Wing Ignite. We have worked with Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation in Owatonna. We have been to Little Falls, Wilmer, Austin, and other cities to try and scare up these deals outside of just the Twin Cities. Because again, our interest is quality, not location. Gopher Angels supports the tax credit, Bill HF89, at $20 million and the removal of the Sunset Clause. When we started Gopher Angels, it was the intention of an organization open to those new to angel investing. And why is this important? Well, all of our members are accredited investors. They do have the option of using their hard-earned dollars to invest in other areas like real estate and the stock market. But in the 25% angel tax credit is an incentive to take that risk with their hard-earned dollars to help Minnesota businesses rather than invest, as I mentioned, in the stock market, which has little or no direct effect on innovation in Minnesota. In September of 2016, Gopher Angels hosted the first Midwest Regional Angel Conference here in Minneapolis. We had over 150 attendees representing 13 Midwest states, and 24 angel groups. And why is that important? Dee presented their the angel tax credit to those that were attending from the 14 states and 24 different angel groups and venture firms. This piqued their interest in investing, bringing in outside money, and investing in Minnesota startups. As an example, we were able to entice Dakota Venture Group out of North Dakota and Seedstep Angels out of Oklahoma to invest in a local company called Simonix. So it's important to look at this angel tax credit not only locally, but the fact that we're attracting investors from outside of Minnesota that would not normally look at Minnesota-based businesses. So to wrap this up, our investors are always interested in the fact that the company has been approved under the angel tax credit, an important point of consideration in the investment decision. I'd like to share some quotes from some of our members. Quote on this one is, I would not have made several of the investments I made if it weren't for the angel tax credit. Capital for startup companies is scarce in Minnesota. The Minnesota Angel Tax Credit has been very helpful in attracting capital for companies in need of startup and growth capital. I see that the credit encourages on-the-fence investors to make the necessary investments to jumpstart early-stage companies. Another quote, the Minnesota Angel Tax Credit encourages me to pursue angel investment. And I'd like to quote this as well, collectively, investors in the state are better able to fund high-potential Minnesota companies with the necessary money for research, development, hiring, marketing, and ongoing growth. This is one of the state programs that is really a win-win for everyone. I will add that the people at Minnesota Deed office that run this program are highly professional, responsive, and efficient. They've done a great job. And finally, I first looked at companies that qualify for the angel tax credit. Mr. Chairman and members, thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to testify on behalf of the bill? With concerns on the bill? Please state your name, who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chair, Jeff Nelson from the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I do want to just bring one thing to the committee's attention, and I will ask Ms. Manzi to make sure I'm understanding this correctly regarding the A4 amendment. On the House Research Amendment, line 1.2, it says that page 10, section 5 is deleted. That section relates to annual reports. It also, on the next page, line 2.1, says page 11, section 6 is deleted. Section 6 deals with the revocation of the credits. The annual reports are filed by businesses for 5 years. Annual reports by investors are filed for 3 years. There's two purposes to the annual reports. One is partly for our tracking purposes. One of the things that we must do is provide a report to you, the legislature, on how the program is doing. One of the things that we report on is the number of jobs created, and of course that's what the businesses are providing us.
Well, so let's go to Ms. Manzi on that, and then you can follow up Mr. Nelson. Ms. Manzi?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the two sections that Mr. Nelson is referencing were in House File 89 as introduced so that a cross-reference in them could be updated to be consistent with other things that were being changed in House File 89. With the A4 amendment, those cross-references don't need to be corrected in those two sections, and the bill is not proposing to repeal those requirements from statute, but it's simply deleting them from the bill because the cross-reference no longer needs to be updated. So the reports would be retained in the statute, as would the language related to the revocation of credits.
And that's the way I understood it.
Mr. Chair, if that is
Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chair, if that's the case, then I do not have a concern.
Okay. Thank you. Questions for members? I have Loeffler, Dabney, Schultz, Marquardt. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And one of the things I think we do need to highlight for people is, in addition to the IFOR amendment taking away the set-aside for Greater Minnesota, it also took away the time-limited set-aside for women and minority-owned businesses. And there's tremendous bodies of research that says it's much harder for minorities and women to get funding, particularly non-traditional fields, which this is targeted at. And so I think that we need to know that that's a major step back from how the program has been modified over time. One of the questions I had, though, is one of the limitations on the program is that the business can't have more than 25 employees, which in a high-tech business, oftentimes a lot of work is being done by consulting, and yet we don't require that that consulting be done within Minnesota and create those high-paying jobs as well. And if I'd had a chance to recognize before the testifier spoke, I would really like to have known how much the job creation has been and also where their consulting contracts are going. Because just being based in Minnesota, if most of your work is being done with external vendors, it may not be creating the benefit we have. And I'm wondering if the testifier from Deed has any information on that.
Interruption of Loeffler, you can bring anybody back you'd like. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir, and then to the Loeffler question.
Mr. Chair, again, Jeff Nelson from Deed. Last year, the program was amended by the legislature such that it required that at least 51% of the value of all service contracts be performed in Minnesota. And so that is currently a requirement for a business to be able to be certified to be part of the program.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Nelson. That was something I had forgotten, so that's useful. And then I was intrigued by the testimony of Mr. French, who said he was a mentor of the 75F at the Minnesota Cup, which I've heard of and followed over the years. But he said he was the first U.S. employee, and I was intrigued by that statement. And is this a company that started in another place? What's the international aspect of this company?
Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir, and then respond to the Loeffler question.
Bob French, Chief Operating Officer of 75F, Mr. Chairman, Representative. Yes, there is a group in India, which is a sister organization where some of the tech work is done. The 17 employees that I was referring to are in Burnsville.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. French, was the India portion of the company started ahead of time then?
Yes.
Mr. French?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, the India portion was started before I joined.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. That raises real questions to me about whether this program is focusing the way it should, which was supposed to be about helping Minnesota entrepreneurs with a good idea get access to market and investments, rather than giving a place for foreign established companies to come in and have Minnesota taxpayers start a company with our subsidizing them in their international expansion. And I think this is a total misuse of probably even the Minnesota Cup, which is supposed to also be recognizing Minnesota talent and not interacting with promoting international trade. Not that I'm opposed to international trade, but I don't know that was the goal of this. You know, we did just recently get a report from the legislative auditor that said our research and development credit, which has existed for decades, is, you know, it finally got its first kind of serious review, and the economic benefits are less than the cost to the taxpayer. And this one hasn't, I think, needs that same sort of critical review as to whether or not the taxpayer in Minnesota is seeing that net benefit. And I'm hoping, Mr. Chair, that we'll have a chance to hear the legislative auditor's report on that, because it's the first serious review of that program in a while, and I would hope that this one would be set up for a similar review, because I'm not sure if it's helping foreign companies expand into new markets. I don't think that was the intent, and I'm not sure that it has
for an extra $20 million permanently. That's $40 million of biennium. I know our jobs committee does some really targeted, accountable work, and I think we should look at all of our economic development tools before we step forward on this one. Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Chair Anderson S.
Thank you. Representative Loeffler, you maybe aren't familiar with this, but the Angel Investor Credit, in addition to that requiring that 51% of its employees and payroll are in Minnesota, it also requires that they're headquartered here in Minnesota. So if you're concerned about foreign entities, you know, having their business elsewhere and then not having a headquarters in Minnesota, that's already required in law. And also, maybe you missed this, but when we were talking about the Research and Development Tax Credit, that review was part of the omnibus state government finance bill that we passed into law in 2015, and the legislative auditor is charged with reviewing tax credits that we have here in the state of Minnesota. They started with the R&D tax credit, and they will be doing other ones going forward from here. So that was legislation that was passed in law. Hopefully you voted for that because that was part of that bill.
Okay, before we proceed here, we have two bills left, and on those bills, I know the one from Manoman County, which is my reelection bill, we had people drive in from Manoman County, and if you look at a map, that's like a really long ways away. And so I would really like to get to them, but I'm not going to cut off debate for members here. So, but please consider we have two bills left after this from Representative Loeffler.
Just a brief response.
I threw a filibuster there, but I was just...
No, I did not intend to do that. To Chair Anderson's comment, having a headquarters here, I'm not an expert on business organizational law, but I have learned that companies are pretty effective at having partnerships at nonprofits, have for-profit subsidiaries that are considered independent companies. The independence is sometimes questionable, and I think that that's something we really need to look at if we really want to invest in homegrown Minnesota companies that are an idea of a Minnesotan.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Chair Dabney.
Mr. Chair, I'll be brief, but I am concerned about the application of the A4 Amendment, particularly as it applies to minority and women-owned businesses. We know that Minnesota both has significant gaps between the white majority and communities of color across all sorts of measures. We know that one challenge we have that's gotten some press recently is the difficulty, not so much as I understand from the business community, in recruiting people of color to professional positions, but in retaining them here. And it's not the weather, but it may be Minnesotans' tendency to be God's frozen people in how we relate to newcomers. And to freeze communities of color and women entrepreneurs out of this program in the way that the A4 Amendment did goes, I think, directly against what the gentleman from Gopher Angels said about looking for quality, not location. I would imagine you're looking for quality in, across the spectrum in who you invest in, and this undercuts that in a couple of different ways and is deeply concerning given where we're at as a state at this time. So thank you. All my question, I'll just leave it at that.
No, thank you, Chair Dabney, and I also want to thank you publicly for all the work you've done on this issue in the past, and your points are well taken here. So with that, we'll go to, it would be my intention, Representative Schultz, Marquardt, and then to the next bill. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm concerned that we don't prioritize these tax credits, and my concern is that we're going to exhaust them before women-owned businesses or businesses in greater Minnesota can take advantage of them. So I think we could strengthen the bill, maybe not designate 50%, but some percentage to women-owned businesses or businesses in greater Minnesota to take advantage of the tax credits before they're exhausted by those who have done them before or those who are more organized.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. Lead Marquardt.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and Representative Anderson. This has been a good bipartisan bill over the years, and Representative Dabney, thank you for your work, and Chair Davids and Chair Lincheski, and this has been good. And I thought the testifiers kind of really showed how that can be used beneficially, and I thought that was good. And my only concern, Mr. Chair, is this. And I think Representative Dabney and Representative Loeffler talked to other things, but is this part about taking out the rural Minnesota requirement of 50%? And I hope if this makes that bill, that part is reinstated, that 50%. I mean, if things were equal, that wouldn't be a problem, but it's not. You know, if you look at median income, rural Minnesota is 32% below the metro area as far as median income. And just the recent December unemployment statistics, looking at that by county, I think every county in the metro, I think Hennepin's 3.3% unemployment, Carver, Scott, Washington, they're all 3.3, 3.4. And yet you go into rural Minnesota, you've got at least nine counties where the unemployment rate is over double that, 7.1 or higher. So granted, maybe those folks in rural Minnesota haven't been taking advantage of that, but then I think it's incumbent upon the state to get an outreach and make sure we're focusing rather than just say, well, the rural hasn't been using it, so we're just going to take that requirement out. I just think, Mr. Chair, that if this makes this final tax bill, that this part on the 50% to rural Minnesota and women and minorities is put back into the bill.
Thank you, Lee Marquardt. If you'd like to wrap it up, Chair Anderson S.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Marquardt, for your comments, your concerns. As I mentioned earlier in the Jobs Committee, there was concern expressed about carve-outs and how those work. And so I'm just responding to the feedback that I received from folks from your caucus that had concerns about carve-outs in general and trying to bring this bill back to what it was originally. And we had testifiers in the last committee that were from that had businesses across the state of Minnesota, and they were women that were there, as well as I have one male testifier. So this does not prohibits anybody that is of those previously targeted groups from applying for it. In fact, that's one of the reasons why we have a larger amount, is to give greater access to anybody that is interested. Obviously, we have a very popular program here that provides excellent paying jobs here in the state, but also keeps that innovation here in the state of Minnesota. We want that kind of industry here because it just makes us stronger as a state. And I just want to leave you with this, members. As it was mentioned earlier, Minnesota could really become the digital health capital of the nation if we continue to support programs like this, as well as the research and development tax credit. And why that's important is because we all live and die by these little things that we carry around in our pocket. And I can tell you, as a mom, unfortunately, my son suffers from asthma and allergies. And there is an app that I use that helps me to track when he has symptoms, when there are high incidences of allergens in the air, and I get alerts and notices so that I can help track this, so that every time I go into his allergist, rather than me trying to go by memory, I've got it all recorded in this little handy device. And I tell you, it's a great way for us, it's a tool for us to be able to have better health overall. And I really think that this Angel Investor Tax Credit is just one tool for us, not just to provide better paying jobs, but to provide better health for the citizens of Minnesota. And I would ask for your support. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. Ask Chair Anderson, ask for news or motion of House File 89 as amended later for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Chair Anderson, and to all your witnesses and to the department. Item next, we will go to House File 820. Vice Chair McDonald moves House File 820. I do not believe there are any amendments at this point. And we have, you got your revenue note. Okay, I believe there are a couple of folks that wish to testify. Before we get started, we have two testifiers, it looks like, at the table. Is there anyone that wishes to testify on behalf of this bill with concerns thereof? And members, as you know, this, I believe, was heard last year also. So to your bill, Vice Chair McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the opportunity to introduce the bill. In an effort to make America fit again, and particularly Minnesota, I introduce House File 820.
I guess it was 2 years ago we heard this.
2 years ago, yeah. Correct, yes. And it was also through the Senate and had great support on both sides of the aisle, and it's a great bill. What this does, legislation will provide a non-refundable tax credit worth up to $30 a year to individuals whose employers provide them with employer-based paid health care membership. So to qualify for the credit, employees must work out a minimum of 8 times a month. I recommended a minimum of 3 or 4 times a week, but this bill only has a minimum of 8 times a month. So presently there's a little quirk in the law, whereas if an employer has an in-house gym that is used by their employees, there is a tax impact for the employee. But if a smaller business that can't afford to build or operate a gym on site wants to provide employer-paid health care memberships for the employees, then the employer must declare it's a tax benefit on their annual W-2. So this gives the individuals who qualify for this a little tax incentive. There is substantial evidence that indicates that a little financial incentive is enough to entice people to be fit. Physically active people usually are happier, healthier, more productive, and take less sick days. So in an effort to promote that and to implement that in our state, this small little bill, which has a small tax impact, really is just the start of it. And we hope to work on this and continue with a little more benefit for the individuals. But right now it's a $30 a year savings for each employee for the year. And with that, Mr. Chair, I do have a guest with me today. And we have, Eric, you're going to speak first?
Sure.
Yeah, so I have Mr. Eric Linseth, who is from Lifetime Fitness, and he had just a brief comments to make, if you would allow him to speak.
Sure, Mr. McDonald, this has to do with fitness centers. I guess I'm not familiar with them. I might need to take a tour. But anyway, if you please state your... did the department want to talk about this when he was here?
I'm not an expert either, Mr. Chair.
Please state your name if you have sent for the record.
Mr.
Please.
Chairman, thank you very much, members of the committee. My name is Eric Winseth. I am the general counsel at Lifetime Fitness. We formed a coalition with two other major health and fitness companies here in Minnesota, Anytime Fitness and Snap Fitness. As the chair mentioned, you've seen this bill a couple of years ago. I think that everyone understands that there is a significant cost to employers from unfit employees. There's lost productivity, there's greater absenteeism, more sick leave is used, there are greater disability claims, and there are higher health care costs. And obviously, our industry is an industry focused on helping people improve their health. As Representative McDonald mentioned, financial incentives do work for employees to be able to improve their health, and we have seen that. A number of health clubs and insurance companies have long partnered to offer reimbursements or subsidies to those who exercise a particular amount every month. And often you would see like a Medica or Health Partners or Blue Cross Blue Shield offer, say, a $20 incentive for people to be able to exercise. And those health insurance companies have studied the effects of that, and they found that the incentive actually induces people to join health and fitness clubs. And then they have seen, over the course of their studies, a fairly good reduction in facility claims, physician claims, and prescription claims for them. And increasingly, we would like to see employers begin to participate in these kinds of programs. And so that's the focus of our tax credit. And as Representative McDonald mentioned, the focus of this is to try to level the playing field between large employers and small employers, particularly in outstate Minnesota. Large employers who build health and fitness facilities on site, they can deduct the cost that they incur to build those facilities, right, as a capital expense and as operating expense. And then the employees who get to use those facilities, they do not see that fair market use in the form of compensation. Whereas for small employers, they can deduct the cost of providing the subsidy to their employees, but it gets passed along as a taxable fringe benefit. So it's part of the employee's compensation on which taxes have to be paid. So this is a modest tax credit of up to $30 per year to incent people to exercise. You only get the credit when you actually exercise 8 times a month, and so you have alignment then between the tax incentive and the behavior that we want to incent. So I would encourage you to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. I believe there's no one in the audience in opposition to this. So please state your name if you represent for the record, please.
Hi. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kyle Henning. I am a Anytime Fitness franchise owner in Farmington and Lakeville. And I'm here today as not just a fitness club owner, but as a health advocate for members in my communities. I can say firsthand that incentives, fitness-based incentives like this really do work. Just yesterday at my gym, I had a gentleman and his wife come in just to share a story with us. They were at a reunion, and two of his classmates had already died of heart disease. And he said that he had saw some of his classmates 2 years ago, and that many of them had gained 30 or 35 pounds just in the last 2 years. They called it their winter weight. And he was excited, and so was his wife, that they were both in shape. And I can say without a doubt that their insurance-based incentive is what brought them to our club and is what kind of motivates them to keep going as well. They were in to ask about their incentive and their refund and to make sure that they were receiving that. So I'll keep this short, but just kind of want to emphasize what Representative McDonald said, that the incentives really do work. I see it firsthand every day with my members. So I urge you to please pass this bill. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. And as far as getting in shape, I've always considered round to be a shape. Okay, with that, we will go to questions for members. Chair Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, when we are dealing with taxes and especially tax credits, we're often trying to change behavior, and I think that was the testimony here. I'm not currently, because I dropped my membership during the legislative session, and fitness center up in New Hope that I go to during the interim at least. And I can have a program where I can kind of put it to sleep for a while and then kind of come back. But I was trying to remember we're on auto pay, so I don't really remember what we pay per month. I know it's 100 plus for my wife and I. And I'm just trying to grapple with the idea that $30 would change my behavior. You know, in the sense that I'm already using a fitness center. If I wasn't, I'm not sure $30 would be an incentive to encourage me to join or not join. I would probably join as I have in the past for other reasons. So maybe if one of the two testifiers could comment about that. Because I'm talking, it must be probably about $1,400 a year is what we pay for our joint membership, I'm guessing. So $30 one way or another is not really a major incentive.
Questions for members?
Well, I'm posing that to the...
Oh, I didn't hear a question in there.
Well, yeah, I said I was interested in hearing what their comments were about the $30. We kept in the testimony, they kept saying modest incentive, and I would actually say rather than modest, a very small incentive.
Mr. Linsep, to the Carlson question.
Sure, Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson. I would describe this as a starting point. I think that it was calculated based on a $34 average monthly membership. And again, I'm not a tax expert, so I might be able to refer to tax counsel on this. But I think we tried to set this as a tax incentive that we felt would incent enough behavior. We tried to come up with an average amount paid for dues on a monthly basis. Obviously, some health clubs like Lifetime have somewhat higher membership dues. Other clubs like Anytime and Snap have somewhat lower membership dues. So this is designed to strike a balance and is a starting point that we think will begin to incent some behavior, but also carries a fiscal note that is under $1 million every year. So it's a relatively modest fiscal impact. We think it's a starting point for the state.
Chair Carlson?
Yeah, well, sure. The only thing I'm questioning is whether that's a big enough incentive to really bring about change. And then, of course, you also have people who are already members of a fitness club. That would be getting a $30 windfall. Not that that's huge, but...
Mr. Chair?
Or or is it for new members only?
Okay. Representative McDonald, then Detmer, then we're going to go to the next bit.
Yeah, I can respond to that. It is a modest amount. I certainly recognize that. If you recall, last week I had a bill here, tax incentive for restaurants, and Culver's was here. And it certainly would go a long way. $30 could get you a lot of butter burgers. So something to consider as well. And that was a really late laugh, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, I'm in the process of trying to lose weight, and I have to admit that I've gone to Culver's for the butter burger probably too frequently.
They're delicious.
They are.
Yeah, for those who weren't here, we had a lot of...
Let's wrap it up with them. Detmer, and then McDonald, and then the next bill.
Just quickly for some information, I know the YMCA, if you depend on your insurance... health insurance policy that you have, a lot of times they will give, and your age, they give really reduced rates on their membership. So, and if you're 65 and older, I think it's basically you get free memberships. So that's through the YMCA, and it depends on your insurance that you carry.
Thank you. You want to wrap it up for a few
minutes? Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate your support. We worked hard on this for many years, and it had a lot of support on both sides of the aisle, and it is a serious issue. I was having a little fun with my testifier from last week from Culver's, and it allows me to, if I eat a couple of butter burgers, I can run more and join the gym and become very active. But it is a serious issue. Obesity in Minnesota is a very serious issue, and although $30 is a small amount, we need to do everything we can and save every penny to make sure that people are healthier and more fit in Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I thought about running once, too. Okay, so Representative Vice Chair McDonald moves that House File 820 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Alamos Tax Bill. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Thank you, Vice Chair McDonald. So it's laid over for possible inclusion. Item next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The Davids Bill, House File 1248. Which members was in, or some variation thereof, in the bill last year. Well, I will move House File 1248. Mr. Haas, would you like to start out?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
State your name and who you represent for the record, please.
I'm Bill Haas. I represent the White Earth Tribal Nation. And, Mr. Chair, you are correct. This is the language that was in the tax bill last year that was not signed by the governor, so we're bringing it forward again this year. What this bill does, it provides $2 million, first of all, to Minnehaha County, and of that $2 million, $1 million will go to the Minnehaha County Health Center, and then $1 million would go to White Earth to cover their shortfall in the Indian Child Welfare Program, and it would be a one-time appropriation. And then another $1 million would be directed to Minnehaha County, and this money would be used to replenish their decreasing surplus that they've had to draw down to cover additional expenses due to their human services and public safety issues that they've come up. So I have with me today Mr. Frank Thompson, who is the auditor for Minnehaha County, so I will turn it over to him.
Please state your name. And first of all, before we get going, is there anyone in the audience who should testify with concerns on the bill? Anyone else for the bill other than the two folks that are here? Department? Okay, so please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
My name is Frank Thompson, and I am the Minnehaha County auditor.
Welcome to committee, sir.
Thank you. I'm honored to come and speak with you today regarding House File 1248. This bill would appropriate a $3 million grant to the County of Minnehaha to support the Minnehaha Health Center, Minnehaha County, and the White Earth Nation. Minnehaha County is supportive of this grant to help fund the continued transition and management of the White Earth Nation Transfer of Health and Services, Health and Human Services programs from Minnehaha County to the tribe. Minnehaha County and the City of Minnehaha are also looking for support to help maintain our critical access hospital and nursing facility. Identified in a University of Wisconsin study, Minnehaha County has the lowest overall health outcome and factor rating of all 87 counties in Minnesota. Reducing these health disparities have been challenging given the myriad of social and economic issues impacting our residents. In particular, with a poverty rate in excess of 26%, which is one of the highest in the state, and a crime rate at 75% higher than that of Hennepin County. The Mahnomen Health Center responds to a far more challenges than most any other critical access hospital in the state. With being located in an area with severe poverty, the Mahnomen Health Center faces other challenges unique to any other critical access facility. In particular, the Mahnomen Health Center ranks only behind the Hennepin County Medical Center with the second highest per capita of bad debt. For example, if the hospital was successful in recapturing just 68% of its bad debt that it was unable to collect, the hospital would be able to operate at the end of the year in the black. In addition, with nearly 89% of all emergency room visits from patients on Medicaid or other public insurance programs, along with the impact of the Affordable Care Act, the Mahnomen Health Center is struggling to cash flow, averaging nearly a $1,500 a day loss. While the Mahnomen Health Center has been making great strides to find efficiencies, streamlining the process to capture more of the bad debt, reducing expenses, the reality is the Mahnomen Health Center is struggling, and if we should have to close our nursing home, hospital, and the clinic with health disparities, of which we are already amongst the worst in the 87 counties in the state of Minnesota. This will only worsen, and many of our residents will suffer as a result. Mahnomen County is also asking for assistance to help fund its operations. Presently, Mahnomen County is the sixth highest tax-rated county in the state, and as a county with a severe amount of poverty, the county is unable to levy the taxes necessary to maintain the county's vast public safety, public transportation, and health and human services needs. Thank you for your time today, your consideration, and hopeful support.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. I think we'll go to the next witness, and I do have some questions here. Please state your name and who represents the director, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Julie Hansen. I am the Director of Social Services in Mahnomen County.
How far was your drive?
Well, it depends on what route you take, but it usually takes about five and a half hours to reach downtown St. Paul.
You went southeast, you'd be in Chicago from my place.
Yep. That is correct.
Okay. Please provide your testimony, then we'll go to member questions.
I would just like to reiterate Mr. Thompson's comments. Mahnomen County, and especially Mahnomen County Social Services, is very much supportive of the White Earth Nation transfer of human services, and that has been a benefit to our community and to our families and children that we work with. I would also just like to reiterate the facts that Mr. Thompson shared with the poverty level and our crime rates and our need for critical care, that any benefit that we could receive, any support that we could receive, would benefit our families and our children who receive social services and who are in need of the public safety services that we provide. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from members? And it's the Mahnomen Indians, I believe?
Right, yes. Santa, oh, dear boy.
No, high school is Indian.
Oh, the Indians?
Yes, it is.
Mr. Chair.
Can you send me a hat? Do they have, like, a baseball hat? Send me a hat, I'll send you a check. Just tell me how much it is.
That sounds great. They not only play football there, but they live it.
Okay. Well, I'll talk to you afterwards. Okay. Questions for members? Chair Anderson S.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious, can you give more details on actually what the health center will include? And then also, Mr. Chair, I didn't hear where you would refer this bill. Is this going to Health and Human Services, I assume, or where is this going next?
I believe we'll go anywhere we need to go, but I believe last year it was strictly taxes, wasn't it?
Yes.
Mr. Michael, this was strictly tax issue in the tax bill. Yeah. Chair Anderson S.
Well, Mr. Chair, so it wasn't heard, if I'm correct, Mr. Michael. This was never heard on the House side, correct?
Mr. Michael?
I believe it may have been heard. I'm not absolutely positive about whether it
was. Mr. Chair.
Mr. Haas?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, to Representative Anderson's question. It was not heard in the House. It was heard in the Senate Tax Committee. It was a Senator Scoy bill, and then...
Was it, Mr. Haas, was it, do you know if it was heard in the Senate HHS committee?
Mr. Chair, no, it wasn't. Okay. It was strictly the tax bill.
Chair Anderson S.
And then, Mr. Chair, on my question regarding what exactly is the health center, I remember this from bonding a few years ago, I think, and I if you can fill me in the details, I think at one point it had like a fitness center in there and a swimming pool and things like that. Maybe you can give me some greater details on, and if you have plans for the health center, I'd love to see that piece too.
Mr. Yeah. Thompson?
Yes, thank you. The Middleman Health Center is a combination of three entities, actually. It has the hospital, it has the clinic, and it has the nursing home. There is no swimming pool. It's not a health gymnasium type operation. It's strictly for medical care.
And Mr.
Chair, I understand that.
Mr. Chair, but wasn't there a therapy pool? Maybe I'm not using the correct terminology. And if you could provide the plans to me, not right now, obviously, but when you get a chance, if you can provide the plans to me, that would be very helpful.
Heather Thompson?
We will look, yes, we will look into that.
Yes is the right answer.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Chair Anderson S?
That's it.
Okay. Unless you wanted to say no, of course. Chair Carlson?
Yeah, just very quickly, I'm just wondering how broadly based this this problem is. I listened to the testimony, and you've obviously got a problem, but what comes to mind is that before redistricting, but it's still close, I had North Memorial Medical Center in my district. And if I recall correctly, it was 20-some million a year, because it's a large entity, in uncompensated care. And that issue goes before, long before the Affordable Care Act. And we also have had some issues with Hennepin County Government Center, or Hennepin County Medical Center. And they had the same issue, although they had more resources, being that they were a public entity. North Memorial is a private nonprofit hospital, and they didn't have any access to tax revenue or anything like that. So I guess with what your testimony is, I'm aware then that we have your medical facility. I know that North Memorial has had times when they've been struggling. So the question I have is, are there other healthcare entities in the pipeline that are also struggling that maybe would be in for some help one way or another?
I do believe in the tax bill 848 last year there was other funds available for situations like this. Mr. Michael, was there an Erickson provision? Mr. Michael? Carlson question.
Mr. Chairman, I think that there were a number of other grants in the tax bill, and I think one or more of them were for social service, health and welfare type things. I think this was the only one for a hospital that I can remember, or a health center. Chair Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, what I was picking up on was the hospital component of this hospital slash clinic. It's an interesting question, because I know that some of the hospitals out there, I remember when I worked with Representative Huntley when he had Health and Human Services, there's a lot of discussion about struggling hospitals and so on, and I'm not sure that I have a solution yet as to how we resolve that. I know in your testimony you pointed to the Affordable Care Act as part of the problem, perhaps currently, but I do know that the time period I'm talking about predated the Affordable Care Act. So this has been an issue. For those of you that aren't familiar with North Memorial, literally right across the street is one of the lowest income neighborhoods in the city of Minneapolis. It's located in the city of Robbinsdale, and if you go across the street to the east, you're in probably, if not the lowest income neighborhood in the city of Minneapolis, one of the lowest. And I think that drove a lot of what their problem was with uncompensated care, and their a hospital that also, if you watch the news many times, you see where people that have been involved in an accident in Greater Minnesota, they've got a helicopter service, they're bringing them into North Memorial, and there are instances where there's no real reimbursement mechanism, apparently, for some of those very high-cost cases. So I'll just drop it at that point, but just kind of point out it's a big problem, and I guess we're hearing from one, but there may be others. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, seeing no further questions, I'll renew my motion that House File 1248 be later for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Members, tomorrow, an exciting day at the Capitol, House File 893. And thank you for the folks from Inman County. Appreciate you coming down. House File 893, the governor's tax proposal. We'll hear that in full. Thank you for your good work today, members. Good government all the time. We're adjourned.